One of the early mistakes was not trusting people and your team members enough. Anybody that's trying to do everything and doesn't trust their team members to do the work at a high level, then it's just going to bog you down. So the people that I work with are super intelligent, dynamic people that I fully trust. And it means that I don't need to micromanage. And if I did, I think I'd make a mess of it.
There are leaders who rise through the ranks, and then there are those who reinvent the game. Today's guest is Leon Farran. So in this episode, we're unpacking how Leon is building a personal and professional brand rooted in purpose, partnerships, and greener planet. Of course, you're building something from scratch. This is uncharted territory. So you're going to bound to do things. You're going to bound to do mistakes. And also, but you're going to celebrate a lot of wins. Yeah. So why? What's the hype of being an entrepreneur? Why people jump to that?
They've just got a pain tolerance that's higher than others, that they simply don't give up. But on that note, I do think that you should step back sometimes and just celebrate some of those small wins, because otherwise it makes you crazy.
This conversation is your reminder that personal growth and business transformation are deeply connected. Welcome to Reimagining You, the podcast where we explore the stories, strategies, and shifts that redefine what leadership and legacy look like today. I'm your host, Dr. Eli Daher. There are leaders who rise through the ranks, and then there are those who reinvent the game. Today's guest is Leon Farran, a former engineering services, HR, and manpower leader in heavy industries like oil and gas, who did not just manage people. He reimagined the systems they work in. From running workforce operations across Asia to advising startups and earning his board certification with INSEAD, Leon did not stop at corporate success. He turned his energy inward, asked the hard questions, and decided to bet on a cleaner, smarter future. The result? Green Lion, a global battery recycling startup, transforming e-waste into energy solutions at industrial scale. So in this episode, we're unpacking how Leon made that leap from manpower to mindset, from operations to innovation, and how he's building a personal and professional brand rooted in purpose, partnerships, and greener planet. Leon, welcome to the episode.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Eli. It's been a long time, and it's a real pleasure for you to have me here in Dubai.
It's a pleasure seeing you after so many years, and I have a confession for you, right? When I met you, and I know we know each other from, I don't know, maybe 10 years
many
now?
Many years, yeah.
Many years, right? I never knew who Leon is or was till I had to do some research, and I found out a very colorful background. Very interesting. Your journey is so inspiring, starting from you being born in Kenya, which I never knew, because you don't look Kenyan, right?
Yeah, and the accent.
And the accent, yeah. Right? Kenyan Australian.
Yeah.
But you had a good startup from when you were 12 years old. So I don't want to steal your thunder. I would like you to introduce yourself to our viewers and audience.
Thank you very much.
So who's Leon?
Well, maybe the short preview is, you're right. I was born in Kenya. My family still lives there, a lot of them. My father and my mother were both born there in East Africa. And so grew up and had a brilliant childhood. Moved to Australia for effectively schooling. You know, did all my schooling and was very, very lucky to be in Australia, where they provide you with, you know, such great opportunities and education. I guess two very creative parents. So they are both architects and they're creators. And my mother's a teacher now, teaches art and in her retirement. My father's retired too, of course. But always very, very environmentally focused. In fact, how they designed houses were to reduce energy consumption really before it was cool. And before it was a focus, heat and cool housing without energy was the mission that my mother imparted on. So massive greenie, big hippie, Finished my schooling and university and went into oil and gas because growing up in Perth, Australia, Western Australia, that's
very oily.
You have two options, right?
Yes.
Oil and gas or mining, which didn't sit well with my, of course, the environmentalist and the greeny part of my family. But it did pay the bills. And I learned a lot. And I'm very, very thankful for those 17 years in oil and gas services. As you said, started out in manpower and then project services, engineering services, until I had the confidence to go out and start my own businesses in that same field after trying to start a business in 2010 while working in the oil and gas field. Of course, that was my first true startup, and it went okay. When I say okay, it just means that it didn't lose money, but it didn't make much either. And then, you know, 2016 was when really sort of burnt the boats, as it were. So there was no retreat and couldn't rely on my big salary. Had to make my startups work. And then I guess, you know, fast forwarding to today, as you said, Green Lion consumes 120% of my time and energy. But I'm very grateful and thankful that being able to build another business, Agile HRO, which is doing great. And before that, Dare Energy, which was sold twice, so which I was lucky to be part of.
You're a builder.
Yeah, that's my version of creating. My other family members create much more beautiful things, but I think that there's some creativity in business creation as well.
Nice. I'm going to take you back to your 12-year-old, which you probably skipped a little bit because you used to pick orchards.
Yeah, I was a fruit picker in orchards.
And
just did any job that could help my family out at that time.
So when do you think the mission of being an entrepreneur have just started boiling in your head?
If you look at it, I had two great inspirations, which were my two grandparents, my two grandfathers. One was an industrialist that had no education for his entire life until he turned 80, where he did his bachelor, master's, and then PhD after the age of 80. Wow. And he believes in education being the most important fundamental foundation.
A lot of the baby boomers like myself believe that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And and to contrast, my other grandfather was also an industrialist with no education apart from through the military, but then was an entrepreneur himself. And he started a lot of businesses in East Africa and imported a lot of the firefighting tools and whatnot. And he believed absolutely that Leon should not go to university because it's a waste of his time, and he's going to build something from when I was very young, building bicycles and for my friends and charging them money and, you know, doing things.
Nice. Yeah. So you took the balance. You had a little bit of education, a little bit of entrepreneurship, and you made both grandpas happy.
Yeah, just appease them both.
Exactly.
Didn't have the staying power for a level of education as yourself, but got through some basics and kept them happy.
Yes,
and MBA. Yeah,
great. So you've tackled the engineering services, the HR world a little bit, the oil and gas, and then you made a leap towards the green energy.
Yes. Yeah. That was always the intent, is to do something a little bit better for the planet. We did in Dare Energy, we did transition the business from a revenue perspective to largely hydrocarbons and oil and gas projects to green energy and energy transition. Perhaps a product of the oil crash in 2015.
Yes.
But nonetheless, it was fairly successful, and we did quite a lot of business in engineering services for offshore wind and whatnot. And the energy transition. And that's really where I learned that I believe in the energy transition and believe it's important. I'm not saying we can't move away too rapidly from you know, hydrocarbons and energy sources that provide, you know, energy to the developing world, for example. However, in order to transition the energy transition and a more sustainable future, you need batteries. There's no way around it. Whether it's solar or hydro wind, it needs to go into a battery. And then so began the rabbit hole of how unsustainable battery production is. and what happens to the materials. And so that's really where I thought it was a huge problem. And I was just so lucky to be introduced to my co-founder almost at that very moment when I, you know, was sort of educating myself about the breadth of the problem.
Okay. Hmm. Nice story. So we talked about the mission, and I guess, you know, I just want to, for the viewers and the audience, remind them this is, you know, we covered the 10-step process in personal branding, and everybody who comes in, whether they're executive, they're entrepreneurs, they're consultants, they want to build their personal brand. They're sitting behind a comfort trap. It's basically they're sitting in a company with a business card, a nice title, a company name, and they're stuck.
Yep.
Right? So they are figuring out how to shift, how to go whether to something that they love, starting a business, pursuing a mission or a vision or an ambition, or simply being on a portfolio where they do a portfolio management, sitting on boards here and there. Yeah. The shift is what is most difficult, and you've done it pretty well, and you've always been creative and entrepreneurial. So first step is always crafting your mission, but the second step is really what makes you different. Now, talking about you, you come in from the oil and gas side, the energy services. What makes you so credible knowing the lithium issues or the batteries and whatever? I mean, when you go and present to investors, they will say, Leon, you come from the other side. What makes you so credible? Why should I invest in your business?
Yeah. No, it's a great point. And actually, it's the reason why I didn't jump into this business as quickly as my co-founder had hoped. When we met, you know, he's just to sidetrack and tell you a little bit about him quickly.
Sure.
Dr. Reza Katal, you know, I make fun of him because he's, you know, he's got 6 degrees, which of his circle of friends and all the people and many that work for us, you know, that's just average. Which is incredible. Sort of a couple of bachelors, a couple of masters, and of course PhD in chemistry, chemical engineering, environmental engineering.
Oof, heavy.
And so polar opposite to me. He's bright and incredible, and
in a different way.
And you know, highly educated. But what made him non-typical is, and because, you know, that's a lot of academic study, but he was he is a true entrepreneur, and he's very commercial.
Okay.
And when I met him early 2019, he had already been working on our technology and our IP for 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So back in 2009, he started working in battery recycling. And so not to go too deep into that, but that's very early years.
Yes.
That makes him a true veteran of the science.
Okay.
The Chinese were, of course, doing it. And he was working in Austria and Turkey, and extracting just the cobalt from these batteries, the first lithium batteries. And they were throwing away the nickel and the lithium and the graphite and copper.
Waste.
And we were just throwing it away. And he asked his much more senior PhD R&D manager at that time, where's it going? They said, China. What's it for? Cathode material.
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, why don't we send all of the material? Why don't we make cathodes? Why don't we aim to do that? Surely we'll get more money.
Mm.
Because he is a commercial thinker. And they, how he tells the story is that he was shut down, told to shut up and stay in his lane and do his job. And so he was fixated on defining this path to take waste and make the most expensive part of an electric vehicle or a battery system, the cathode, directly from that waste. And so it took him, you know, many years, but by the time I'd met him, he was finishing his PhD at NUS, National University of Singapore.
Yeah.
And the Singaporean government put us together because it was just as I was exiting my previous company. We'd just sold it. And so we were, you know, they do very well to put you together.
This is great.
Yeah.
Great initiative.
So we're kind of lucky. But back to your question, what makes me credible? I didn't believe I was credible for a long time. Probably still not.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's hard to match somebody as a co-founder with such great intelligence and foresight, right?
Yeah. But you complement each other, right? So
yeah,
you've got the technical convincer, and you've got the business convincer here. So,
well, yeah, it turned out well. And if you see us together, we're like truly old married couple, or we are best friends. But what he had to explain to me like a child is I said, I don't know anything about batteries. I couldn't tell you a single battery chemistry. And it took him a while, and we had many lunches and just talking about getting him a CEO that was not me, because I had another startup. But it was one point where he said, Leon, you really don't understand. You don't need to know anything about batteries. We need to make modular chemical reactors, which is what you've been doing for over 10 years for the oil and gas industry, for FPSOs, for offshore vessels. We need to make small modular chemical reactors, and instead of putting oil or refined or crude materials, hydrocarbons, we need to put in battery waste. Okay. And we need to run a chemical reaction, and it needs to be safe. And at the end of it, and I'll look after that, it'll produce the highest value material that goes into a battery that's finite, and also that just is costing the world too great an environmental impact.
Of course, in the mining. Waste and all this, yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's nice. That's a brilliant. I mean, the way he explained it.
Yeah, he's
makes
incredible.
Sense. Now that you've explained it to me, I mean, I heard the story before, but now it just makes sense, right? So so great. So for anybody who's listening, really, just whatever you are missing or you think you need credibility, find somebody that joined the team to complement. And typically in startups, you'll have 3 or 4 people together. Each one has a different hat, right? Yeah. And the guy with in charge of the money, the in charge of the technology, the in charge of the customer, and so forth. So that's a great, great story. Yeah. So that's the second step. Now, the third step, of course, you need to find your voice and how you're going to be communicated out in terms of your mission and your positioning. I know you just landed, but I know you're a fun person. While I was doing the research, I saw something called champagne and
razor blades.
Razor blades, exactly. Yeah. What's that?
No. I just think it's a lot of these startups. It's all champagne or razor blades. It's a roller coaster, of course. And entrepreneurs absolutely understand this feeling. It's never smooth sailing. It's never just fine. It's either fantastic. You're closing deals. You're making revenue. You're making income. You're garnishing investment. You know, you've invented something new, you've had patents approved, which are all the champagne. But then there's razor blades every day or every other day as well. You know, there's setbacks, there's key people that leave you when you're a 3, 4, 5 people team because they get paid a little bit more and they can't hold out for the equity returning them value.
Yeah.
There's just so many to list. There's being rejected hundreds and hundreds of times from investors who don't believe that you're going to win in this race. There's people that outright tell you that they don't think your product or your science is novel or unique. And you know, you just have to take it on the chin and just get back in the ring.
It's funny because every time I talk to an entrepreneur and I ask, how is it going and what's the journey like? Oh, it's been a hell of a ride. I'm struggling here. They'd always have that lingering pain and they want to express their pain. There's never been somebody that I interviewed as an entrepreneur who tells me there are a lot of champagne.
Yeah.
You're the first one. So a lot of them have, project nicely the agony, but nobody celebrates their wins or achievements and whatever. So I think a good balance between, the road is not rosy. Yeah. Of course, you're building something from scratch. This is uncharted territory. So you're going to bound to do things. You're going to bound to do mistakes. And also, but you're going to celebrate a lot of wins.
Yeah.
So what's the hype of being an entrepreneur? Why people jump to that?
I guess it's just sadists that love the pain. And, I do think that the truly great, and that's not me, but the if you look at the truly great entrepreneurs, they've just got a pain tolerance that's higher than others, that they simply don't don't give up, you know.
Mm.
There are some that are lucky and they nailed the market fit, or they knew enough people to get themselves financed to a point where they can't fail. But most people that are successful, they just have, they quit less. So I think most people won't say that the champagne's a big element of it, and you do get fixated on just grinding through and making sure you're every day you're trying to improve. But on that note, I do think that you should step back sometimes and just celebrate some of those small wins, because otherwise it makes you crazy.
Yes, yeah. Definitely. Otherwise, exactly, it makes you crazy. Let's talk about content. So we are in a hybrid economy today. So we're shifting from my old days, knowledge is power. So we just acquire knowledge and sell knowledge, right? Whether in a company, whether through consulting, whatever, right? Yeah. Now we are in the attention economy. We have a whole bunch of attraction on content and social media, on LinkedIn, professional circles. And then the merging of both, or the intersection of both, is the hybrid economy. So you're pretty active on the content side. In fact, I think they call you, well, not much, but you still have content. Then why do they call you the Michelangelo batteries?
Oh, I don't know. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's great. I'll take that. Well, I think two points. I think that what Reza and what we've done, and that takes a whole team and just amazing people in Green Lion, is we have invented and then brought to commercial scale. We are the first in the world to be able to take in battery waste of all type, all chemistries, and then turn it back into performance grade cathode and anode material. So, you know, it's a little bit boring if you're not in batteries, but it's quite spectacular, because it means that, you know, all of these devices around us, we can take all of those with electric vehicles, with solar farm, data center, battery storage, energy storage, along with those huge, what Mr. Trump calls AI factories or data centers, they all have energy storage. We take all those batteries and we crush them down and we put them in a chemical solution. We bring it down to the molecular level and then we build it back up. With 90% less carbon footprint than making it from raw material. But the kicker is the material and the batteries perform at a higher level than the raw material mined from the earth.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which scientifically is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because it's a more refined product than what comes out of the earth. By that time, it's been broken down, refined, more than one time, obviously.
So how do you want people to find you, to read about you, to you're sporadically active, you post here and there, but how are you, what's your claim to fame, how do you project that? Because it's important for a person to build his own personal brand is to be visible, right? I mean, you have a lot of value. People, executives that are listening to us, they have a lot of value. They're confined within their company.
Yeah.
What we're trying to do is shape it and then put it out in the open so they can claim either thought leadership or, you know, their niche, whatever they want to claim. But, you know, you cannot do that if you're not visible.
Yeah. Look, honestly, you know, we've known each other so long. As a friend, I would say I don't know. I'm not very good at projecting my own brand and being out there. And I don't have any social media, for example, outside LinkedIn. So, you know, what I endeavor to, I need to learn, I need to get better at it. And especially from a company perspective, we need to get this message out a lot more, because we've always been, all my businesses, we say we're going to do something and we do it. We don't advertise what we'll do beforehand. We just go and do it, and we hope that it gains the attention that it deserves, which means that you might be left behind. And from a personal branding perspective, the only rule I've kept to is just to be authentic and be honest.
Yeah, that's a very important rule.
And I don't think anything outside of that has been particularly useful, to be honest. I don't think my brand's very, very good, nor have I pushed the company brand enough.
Mm-hmm. But do you think there is value in pushing that company brand forward, your own visibility, or even your partner visibility? Yep. Does it bring value to the company overall?
No, it certainly would. Certainly does. It's, I guess, and that's what you're very good at, and you're the expert at how do we bring that forward? Because I have no idea.
Mm.
It's not my area of expertise, and definitely it's not his.
Let's have a coffee after the podcast.
Yeah, you've got to teach me. You've got to teach me. Yeah.
Okay. No, very good. Now, you started the Lion business during COVID.
You're right, yeah.
People must have called you, you're crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they, well, I
tell
I
also, me more.
I also thought I was crazy at points, right? I thought I was going to be bankrupt my whole family. And
yeah,
you know, I really went from having very, very comfortable salaries and whatnot, you know, everything taken care of from a household perspective. And
the comfort trap.
Yeah, it's comfort trap.
Yes.
Being living in Singapore, you know, your kids, schooling, and it's not cheap. So yeah, I certainly thought it was the wrong move many times, but you know, kind of burned the boats as it were, and so there's no retreat,
mm-hmm.
and had to make it work. There was sunk too much money and time into it, to be honest. Mm. By the time
courageous,
well, or stupid. But
no, it's proving courageous. Look where you are now with the business. Touch wood.
Yeah, it's still not out the woods. But it was incredible actually with COVID, because we had a process where we had to first concept design the modular technology.
Mm-hmm.
So the science was very much worked out by Reza, but we had to then convert that into an engineering outcome whereby we can build something. We can build a plant.
Yeah.
So we did that, and then we sold it in early 2020. So we sold it just before COVID.
Okay.
And we had our first customer, which is now SK Group, a big Korean battery company.
Yes.
And they said, yeah, look, we'll buy it. Not only that, we'll invest in you. So we had some early traction that was just absolutely crucial to our survival. And then we built our first reactor. We bought parts and assembled it with our team in Shenzhen in China.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually locked down, if you remember, China locked down later than everywhere else, but then locked down much heavier.
Yes.
But we somehow, someone was looking after us, and we had shipped the reactor and the pilot, the first prototype, out from China as it locked down.
Mm.
We shipped it into Singapore before it had locked down fully.
Wow.
We got it working and demonstrated it, garnished more investment, and then we built a big pilot. And we did all these things, and then we started building in 2021. We built our huge commercial plant in the US, which wasn't shut down at all.
Mm.
So we somehow narrowly missed all the blows thrown at us by COVID. Not that it wasn't hard, because it was trying to raise money on Zoom was sucked. But
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. People have it. They have to build trust face-to-face, let alone on Zoom, right?
Oh, it's very difficult. Yeah.
That's tough. Well done.
Yeah.
So when I was doing my board certification with IMD, you ventured into board certification with INSEAD. What were you thinking for that?
Well, there's a few times whereby in life I thought, like when you go back to credibility, it's will they trust? I was, of course, a CEO and a director of small companies. So, you know, we turned over, you know, just over 100 million and 250 in the other company. What's next for me? Is it more education? What garnishes that credibility to be able to take that next step? And I wasn't too sure where I would be heading, but I knew that I wanted to help shape the direction for companies. And you have to be a director, and you have to be credible, and so that's really where why I thought I'd learn more about the governance. It was also just about learning more for my own, own management style.
Yeah. Were you thinking at some stage in part of your mission to be to have a portfolio career where you sit on several boards?
I did, and I had started already by that time investing in startups.
Mm.
As small checks, as an angel. And so I knew that they could get money from anyone. And I think that by and large, the VC model is quite broken. And so I wanted to see if I could bring groups of people together to put money in, but help with time and effort into the businesses that I care about, which would be centered around energy transition, the environment, clean tech, mostly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. Cool. I'm going to shift gear now to the last portion of the episode. You know, I think time was fast.
Yeah.
Because you had so much to share, which is great. Thank you for that. Mistakes and lessons. Can you share one or two mistakes during your journey? And what have you learned? So for our audience to really reflect on that.
Well, we might have to do another whole episode of the mistakes. There's so many. But no, there's plenty of mistakes. I think maybe one of the early mistakes was not trusting people and your team members enough. So anybody that's trying to do everything and doesn't trust their team members to do the work at a high level, then it's just going to bog you down. You know, you can't buy a dog and bark for it, of course.
Yes.
And so that's something I've learned. And so the people that I work with are super intelligent, dynamic people that, you know, I fully trust. Mm-hmm. So they just get on with their job and achieve their outcomes. And it means that I don't need to micromanage. And if I did, I think I'd make a mess of it.
Okay.
Yeah. That's one thing I've learned. And then maybe around, you know, the two businesses that of course are still running successfully is Green Lion and Agile HRO. Agile is a global payroll platform and EOR. And it's doing quite well and founded that before Green Lion, of course, which didn't take any venture funding, any investment. And Green Lion's obviously different. 45 or more million has been invested by venture capital and strategics. And I think it's really, really important that people think really long and hard about raising money and who they're raising money from and what they're going to use it for. Because it's certainly not the end goal to raise money. And, you know, you really are, you're selling a little bit more than just a piece of your company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And dealing with all these investors, it must be a headache.
Absolutely. It detracts from your day job. And it's,
you spend a lot of time just managing requests and managing expectations and, you know. Yeah.
Exactly.
Instead of focusing on the business.
That's right. Absolutely. So, but on the flip side, a good investor is worth, you know, multiples of their money, because they come in and they help you and they open doors for you. There's a network effect there.
That's the right investor you want to be, you want to have, right?
That's right.
So if you meet a 12-year-old picking fruits, what would you advise him?
I would say stick to the law degree and become a lawyer. And definitely do not go into entrepreneurship because it sucks. I've learned a lot.
You shocked me there.
Yeah.
For a while. Eh?
No, genuinely, it's super, super hard. So if I went back, I think there's definitely an argument for staying in a good job. It's not for everyone, and so, you know, I might give that advice, like, don't do this. It depends on the day, right?
Whether it was
champagne or razor blades in the morning.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think it can't change anything, and I wouldn't change anything. It's been a hell of a ride, and it's still going. But I think it's really tough. I don't think I knew what I was getting into, that's for sure. Yeah.
Great. Well, Leon, thank you. This was wonderful. Great exchange. I love the journey. Thank you for being honest, authentic, and being you.
Thanks.
So enjoyed the show.
Thank you, Dr. Ellie. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for having me here.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Reimagining You. From oil rigs to boardrooms, from workforce strategy to battery innovation, Leon Farrant's story reminds us that reinvention isn't a one-time leap. It's a mindset, a discipline, a willingness to keep asking, am I evolving fast enough to meet the future I believe in? So whether you're building companies, shaping talent, or rethinking your next move, this conversation is your reminder that personal growth and business transformation are deeply connected. Leon, again, thank you for showing us what it means to lead with foresights, purpose, and powerful execution. an industry that truly powers the world. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to share it, spread the word, and subscribe to the show. New guests and fresh conversation drop every Thursday at 5 p.m. Dubai time, right here. Until then, keep asking, keep building, and above all, keep reimagining you. Thank you. Thanks for listening to Reimagining You. If you enjoyed the episode, follow the show, leave a review, and share it forward. See you next week with a new episode.